thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
If A,
here's John Williams,
equals B. Stay with me now. There's a little math. I hate to start the show this way, but see if this makes sense. If A equals B,
Lord have mercy.
B equals C, then doesn't A equal C? A equals B, B equals C, therefore A equals C. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 3 o'clock, weekdays from 1 to 3, and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Nice of you to join us, as it is a Wednesday. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic of the Chicago Tribune's in our studio in about a half an hour. We'll talk about the restaurant scene. If there's a restaurant you want his review of, or if there's one you want to tell me and him and everybody else about, please call or text 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls and texts at 135 with Phil. And Ian Holzhauer, the brother of Jeopardy Dominator James Holzhauer, joins us. I hope Ian doesn't know about the news click. Our daily web poll question, James Holzhauer is still dominating on Tuesday, we said. You had four options. A, he's smarter than everyone, 1%. He's quicker than everyone, 14%. He's smarter and quicker than everyone, 73% of you said that. And D, I think something's fishy here, 12%. My answer is B, he's quicker than everyone. My understanding is that a lot of these people on Jeopardy are all about equally smart. He's obviously very smart, but what I think is causing him to win so much is because he's so comfortable with the buzzer. He's just quicker. He knows how to play the game physically. I'm not taking anything away from his smarts. But 12% of you said, I think something's fishy here. And I hate to even introduce that, but I think it was Lauren Lapka that yesterday said, I think something's fishy here.
No, I said, I think he has a photographic memory.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, which is not fishy at all.
No, I mean, some people are just gifted that way.
He is super duper smart. In fact, we wrote down all the questions and answers that he got right or that he faced yesterday and some from the day before. And we'll walk through some of those, if you didn't watch the episode, even if you did, with Ian a little after 2 o'clock.
It's funny to me that you forgot that she said he had a photographic memory.
What with me not having a real good memory and all. How tragic is that? I'd finally qualify to be on Jeopardy and then show up on the wrong day. Okay, let's talk a little bit about A equals B, B equals C, therefore A equals C. I'm right about that, right? That's some sort of property that we learned in algebra or something once upon a time?
Yeah, I remember that.
Thank you.
Is that the Pythagorean theory or whatever it is?
Sure, just whatever it is. A equals B, B equals C, therefore A equals C. Now, here's why I'm bringing this up. Lauren Underwood, who is one of the new congresswomen, she is, for many of us, a bright light. She's from the suburbs of Chicago. She's that tall, radiant nurse is her background. And so there she is questioning the acting Secretary of Homeland Security about why five children have died in U.S. custody in the last 6 months, the 10 years previous, zero, and the last 6 months, five. What's going on here? And she says, as a healthcare professional, I know a little bit about the traumatic effects of holding children in some sort of detention with or without their parents, and it leads to physical ailments and psychological barriers, etc. And so she asked the acting secretary, do you know about this stuff? And he said, yes, I do, but that's not what we're doing. So her implication about the bad conditions in which the kids are being held leading to medical problems, he said, is almost moot. That's not relevant here, but yes, I'm aware of the report about this. But she wouldn't hear it. She was walking him through point by point. If you do this to a child, this will happen. And he'll say, yes, but we're not doing that. And then she'd say another point. And if you do this to a kid, it'll have this negative repercussion. And he would say, what do you want me to say? I know that, but if by saying yes, I'm implying that we're doing it, I don't want to answer that question. And the chairman said, you got to answer the question. And so he very reluctantly answered the questions, and she just kept plowing ahead. She would not hear his difference with her, and she wouldn't stop asking those questions because she was going to get to one central point. So let's just walk through this. This is making some news today. We'll start with cut one, Elif.
Yes or no, can you commit that DHS will not restart family separations under your leadership?
So the President of the United States has said that we're not looking at doing that again.
There's
an executive order in place that says we're not going to take zero tolerance prosecutions, not family separations, but prosecuting adults that are violating the law and resulted in separations. We're not going to restart that right now.
Okay, so you have made a commitment then that you will not restart family separations under your leadership.
So I think the president's statement suffices as a commitment for the administration.
Okay.
She said, look, I've got 5 minutes. I just need yes or no's, and that was not going to happen. Here's cut two.
Just last week, we saw new photos of detained children sleeping outside on the dirt at a Border Patrol station. And on Monday, we learned that a fifth migrant child died in custody since family separation began. Why do these tragedies keep happening?
They're happening because the crisis is exceeding the resources provided. That's why we've asked for more. We've deployed the funding from FY19 that Congress has authorized. We've increased our temporary facilities by 500 beds in Donna, by 500 in El Paso. We've got 3 additional soft-sided facilities coming online in June. We've deployed medical practitioners. We now have over 100 certified medical practitioners in our 2 busiest sectors.
Right, but
and we've asked
keep
for
dying,
more money
sir.
To extend that.
She was saying that it's not enough what you're doing, and it's not a matter of resources. And now here's the gasp statement. I don't know if you'll actually hear people draw breath when she says it, but it was when she did it on TV.
People keep dying, and so this is obviously more than a question of resources. But at this point, with 5 kids that have died, 5,000 separated from their families, I feel like, and the evidence is really clear, that this is intentional. It's intentional. It's a policy choice being made on purpose by this administration, and it's cruel and inhumane. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
That's an appalling accusation, and our men and women fight hard to protect people in our custody every single day.
Chairman asks her if she would restate or rephrase, make more clear what she had to say.
Counselor asked me to ask Ms. Underwood to clarify her statement for the record.
I will be happy to, Mr. Chairman. I said that this is more than a question of resources. Congress has been more than willing to provide resources and to work with you, Mr. Secretary, to address these security and humanitarian concerns. And at this point, with 5 children dead and 5,000 separated from their families, this is intentional. It's a policy choice being made on purpose by this administration, and it's cruel and inhumane.
So the administration has policies. That's A. And the policies lead to, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do my own math here, but she's saying that the administration policies are clear and they're following them. And those policies are leading to the death of children. And she says that those policies are intentional. Well, if the policies are intentional, then aren't the deaths intentional, too? Now, about that implication, one of the Republicans on the committee said this.
You cannot impugn the character of the witness by in stating that he intentionally murders children. That is completely inappropriate, and her words should be taken down. She was very explicit.
I restated. I did not say murder. I said that 5 children have died as a result of a policy choice that he has
said it was intentional.
Excuse me, sir.
That is murder.
This is a policy choice.
And he has said the policy is they stopped those detentions. They don't do it in those separations. He's made that clear repeatedly. You refuse to listen to him. That's not the point. You said he intentionally supported policies that caused the death of children. That is wrong. Your words need to be taken down, Mr. Chairman.
No, Mr. Ranking Member, this happened this week. Yesterday, another child died under his leadership.
Because we can't get the resources to help them. That's what he's here trying to get, is the money to stop this.
So here's so they went on like that a little bit, back and forth. Now are they going to take down her remarks? By the way, in a conference call afterwards, I suggested to her that she was rebuked by the Republicans, and since they control the committee, by the committee, I said that your words were rescinded, I think was the word I used. And they said, no, they were taken down. Steve, those are 2 different things.
Okay, but you misspoke there because it's significant. It's a democratically controlled committee. It's not the Republicans who did it. It's her own party controls the committee.
So enough of them crossed over, because I think the vote was 9-7.
Okay. Well,
so
yeah.
It was the vote of the committee to take her remarks down, which is different than rescinded. I want to be clear about that, because on the conference call afterwards, I suggested that, and then I think it was Lynn Sweet at the Sun-Times said, no, it wasn't that, it was this, and we sort of cleared up the mud that I made. Her remarks were taken down. I'm not sure what the implication is, but what happened to her remarks is not as severe as the remarks were rescinded. Either way, there was that 9-7 vote. And they did something to say, all right, we weren't really groovy with what you just said. So I got on a conference call afterwards, because afterwards she wanted to talk about how there's a problem with veterans committing suicide, as many as 20 a day. And she has an initiative, a bill that's passed the House, or at least a committee she's on, to try and address that situation. And there were several of us on the conference call. And then when she got done making her remarks, they said, okay, does anybody have any questions? Well, a lot of us wanted to talk to her about what she was saying about the administration's position with these children that are being held in detention. Is she really trying to suggest that the death of these children is intentional? Or is she simply playing with words? The policy is intentional. But I don't think you can have it both ways. If you say the policy absolutely leads to the deaths of the kids, and the policy is intentional, then the deaths are intentional. A equals B, B equals C, therefore A equals C. So all of us were on this conference call to ask her about it. This is cut one. You don't mean that the death of those children is intentional, but that the administration has an intentional policy, right?
I believe that the administration has a policy that they have continued to enforce, that they have not changed from the time that, you know, the first deaths happened in November and December of 2018, and that that is a policy choice. It is a deliberate and it is an intentional policy choice.
You understand it was taken by some as if you said that they were intentionally killing those children.
That's not what I said. I can't comment on the way that others interpreted my words. I'll say it like this, that my conclusion is that there has been an intentional choice, an intentional policy decision to continue with those policies.
So do you have anything to say about that, folks?
No.
You were given a chance to rephrase what you said, and you left out you kind of recast what you said, but apparently not enough for your critics. When you said it the second time, mean to take out some of the language that made it seem like you were accusing the interim DHS secretary of killing kids?
I was asked to clarify or restate what I said. And so I acknowledge that this problem, and to be specific about the problem, the problem is the five deaths of migrant children and the 5,000 separated from their families is more than a question of resources. And it goes to an underlying policy choice that this administration has continued to pursue.
Okay, so she just goes on like that. That was Lynn Sweet, by the way, from the Chicago Sun-Times, who was also on the call. And a couple of us were just giving her an opportunity to minimize the damage. In fact, at one point, I just want to play one more cut after a break. Lynn Sweet says something like, do you think this is the best way to affect justice for the children? That's the end game here, right? We're trying to get either the resources or get the resources properly deployed so that the kids aren't dying in custody. That's what the hearing's about. So Sweet says, do you think that what you're saying is helping your cause? And her answer was interesting. Lauren Underwood, the new congresswoman from the Chicago area, was on a committee that was asking questions to the acting Homeland Security Secretary about five children who have died in U.S. custody now. It's just a shame. The word crisis gets bandied about too much, but I think we all understand the importance of this, the urgency of this. So what are we going to do about it? And she said to the Homeland Security Secretary that the policies of the administration are intentional. Kids are dying. Therefore, that kids are dying is the intent of the administration. That's my read on it. And that's what a lot of people were reading on what she was saying, though she did not say that per se. She implied it so specifically that it virtually stopped the hearing. and they tried to figure out what to do with those incendiary remarks. On a conference call afterwards, several of us in the Chicago media asked her a little bit about this. Lynn Sweet at the Sun-Times was one of the people. Now, the congresswoman is on her speakerphone. We asked her to pick up and use the handset. She wouldn't, so she's kind of echoey. And Lynn Sweet was kind of cutting in and out on her end. A lot of us had dialed in. But Sweet was asking her, is this implication that the administration's trying to kill kids the best way to get what you want done?
How was this the most useful way to help solve the problem?
Well, as you know, every fiscal year when the president and the administration submits a budget request, it is customary for the leaders of those agencies or departments to come before the
So then she went on with a pretty long answer about how agencies submit budgets and budgets get cut and budgets need to be prioritized and why aren't we doing more about cybersecurity, and she kind of talked around it. And we were near the end of this conference call. So finally, I said this.
But Congresswoman, do you think it would bring the temperature down on your comments, though, if you would at least acknowledge that the administration or Homeland Security doesn't want these children to die either? I mean, you may disagree with their policies, but you're making it sound as though their policy is intentional and the policy is leading to the death of the kids. Therefore, the death of the kids is intentional. You don't really think they want that to happen, right?
So the policy is intentional because they set the policy. It's an intentional choice. They requested resources. We talked about the amount of money that he was requesting. And I said at the beginning of the statement that this is more than just a resource question.
All she had to do was say no. All she had to do was say no. All she had to do was say, yeah, we don't mean that they're intentionally killing kids or that they want kids to die. All she had to do was say that, and she would not. And that's disappointing. I mean, she hasn't been in the Congress for 20 minutes, and she's already sounding like one that's been there for 20 years. It's 129. Steve Bertrand has WGN Radio News. Afterwards, Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, stops by. If there's a restaurant you want his review of or you want to tell me, him, and everybody else about, you'll get a chance. By the way, Steve, if the president says he's not going to work with the Congress until the investigations end, is that just rhetoric? This is just the day's controversy. This ain't going to stick, right?
Well, I don't know that there's been a lot of working with the Congress anyway. So, you know, they thought this infrastructure bill maybe had a chance. He doesn't always hold to his pronouncements. So, you know, maybe things will change, sure.
I think we should at least allow him to say, all right, I was ticked. Nancy Pelosi said that I did something terrible or whatever it was she said that set this off.
Well, I don't think he will do that.
So I shouldn't have said that. And all right, let's get that infrastructure bill done.
The most fascinating part of the whole thing to me was that in ABC's reporting this, that his top aides, some of his top aides were literally at the door saying, don't do it.
Don't go out there.
And he did it anyway.
By that meaning, don't go out there and then say that.
He was never going to go out there and say anything. He set it up all to go out and rant about what Pelosi had said in the investigations.
And I just want to read some of your texts, because while we finished up our conversation about Lauren Underwood, the congresswoman from, I'm not exactly sure what her home base is, but she's a suburban Chicago congresswoman. West suburbs, just elected, and she's a nurse, so she's on there talking to the acting Homeland Security Secretary about the deaths of five young people being held, these immigrants, in U.S. custody. And she was saying, what are we going to do about that? And he was being very defensive, and she was being very aggressive. And finally, she said that I think that these policies are leading to the death of the children, and these policies are intentional. And there was a bit of a gasp in the room, because she was essentially implying that the deaths of these children are the intent of the administration. And I expressed my disappointment in her. I don't think that's much more than a really good soundbite. And I was disappointed in that. Your texts include these. 773, there is no question in my mind that these children are disposable, that the administration has no concern whatsoever about their dying. 630 says, I agree with her 100%. They're directly responsible for killing those children. 219 says, maybe before she runs her big mouth, she ought to go to the border and see what she's talking about. Actually, she said in her testimony that she was at the border. 319, what a fool this woman is. 815, you should be outraged that this person is implying that the Trump administration is purposely killing children. I think I was disappointed. 630 said, John, I'm surprised by your comments. I think you're really twisting her words to make it sound worse than they were. 630 said, at least she's there fighting for the kids. Shame on you, John. Shame on you, John. Shame on you, John. 847, the way this administration behaves, I'd have to agree with Lauren Underwood. 815, John, good for Underwood. I believe they do not care. And one more, 847 said, while Lauren Underwood may be a novice to her job, I think it's about time this regime was held accountable for its actions. And there's a little background on that. Phil Vitale's here, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. I don't mean to sound disappointed. How are you, Phil?
Shame on you, John.
But LF just said, there's just one call on line two maybe you should take. So do you mind, Phil? And that's Mira, or Myra, M-I-R-A. Mira, you're on the air. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
Thanks for calling.
How are you?
What's on your mind?
You know, I do think what she said was despicable, but you know what? A lot of the things that come out of Trump's mouth are despicable. And the point I was trying to make was, if we don't rise above being despicable in the way we speak on either side, we're never going to rise above any of this.
That's where I'm coming from.
Exactly. And it just feeds on, you know, we either have to rise above it and take care of business and deal with what we have to deal with as a country, and try to get something done. And it's just as despicable for Trump to come out and say, I want, you know, infrastructure as much as everybody else does, but I'm not going to do it until, you know, Nancy Pelosi takes back all these charges against me. That proves that it's about him. It's not about the country. It's got to be about the country.
Yeah, I think two wrongs don't make a right appropriate on both sides today.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. I'm glad you're listening. Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, Mira. 142. Back to Phil Vitale.
Back to me.
Whose conversation hasn't started. He's the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. You can read him online at chicagotribune.com/dining. By the way, the restaurant show concluded yesterday in Chicago.
Yes.
Like a zillion, not restaurants, but people who serve the restaurant industry were there.
Exactly. But a lot of chefs make the rounds, too. I mean, some of them are out there, and there's always some fun competitions to watch if you've got the time. And but, yes, it embraces everything from pest control to what the new stemware is coming out this year, and uniforms and point-of-sale systems. I mean, they're just all these different layers to what our industry is about.
I talked to somebody off the air. I've got a long interview with them, and I'm trying to figure out how to get it on the air. But it was a company from California, and they make the kind of containers that you would, if you were, say, at Whole Foods and you do a hot take or a cold salad bar, you know,
sure,
you put them in there. Or maybe if you just have a to-go container from a restaurant.
A anyway, ducky bag.
They are making biodegradable, not, no, 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 compostable.
Compostable.
Compostable as opposed to biodegradable.
Right. Well,
or recyclable. That's what I'm thinking.
Compostable as opposed to recyclable.
Right. So we're all used to recycling, but they say, no, we should have containers that are compostable.
Right. That degrade on their own.
And you could put it in your backyard or drop it off at a municipal composting place, of which there are only four in Chicago.
Four.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
But one of the people that I talked to came into our studio, and we sampled these on the air. They were doing the meatless, the impossible burgers,
mm-hmm,
chicken patties, turkey burgers, and breakfast sausages. I've never had that stuff before. Have you?
No, I haven't. One of my colleagues did a little tour of Impossible Burgers and thought, wow, this is really, you know, cool. It's pretty good.
Are restaurants offering this stuff up much?
Some have done it. A couple of fast foods. Burger King has an Impossible Burger.
Which is a shame. I mean, come on, Burger King. You're all about greasy, salty burgers.
Right.
With cheese on white buns. That's what we like.
Well,
you do that well, and then let somebody else do the other one well.
But if they have one, and you could you eat it in the Burger King context with their sauces and their bun and all the rest of it, could you tell the difference?
Well, that's the point. So when they served me a chicken sandwich, which was really good, it was a chicken patty, and it looked like it had been breaded and fried, but it wasn't. It was just ground soy products made to taste like chicken. But then they served it on a really good bun with some really good onions and pickles and a really good guacamole. I thought, well, now, wow, what's going on here?
Right.
The chicken wasn't that bad, but what they do when they serve it is they really make sure you're going to like it.
Right. Well, you go to some of these gourmet hamburger shops, and by the time you've put the Nooski bacon on and the Tillamook cheddar they bring down from Wisconsin, and you've dressed it up and you've got a great bun, how important is that piece of beef at that point? And how much of the flavor you're getting is all coming from the other stuff? Now, of course, you can't put bacon on an Impossible burger because now you've kind of betrayed the whole idea.
Unless there's Impossible bacon.
Probably is. There is a place in Naperville that makes what they call schmacken. It's a deli out in Naperville, and it's become really, really popular. Although it's not meatless, it's porkless, because
so it may have beef or sheep or horse or something in there.
Well, it is something observe, people who are observing dietary restrictions, Jewish dietary restrictions, Muslim district, this they can eat.
Yeah, because these guys described to me meatless bacon is the holy grail of the Impossible business right now.
I believe it.
Because, because for it to be that thin and still have crisp but stay together and look and feel and taste like bacon, he said nobody has. If you come up with that, you win.
Right.
But nobody has yet.
Right. It'd be like learning how to cultivate a white truffle. If you can do that, you can just pick out your private island because that's where you're going to live.
Really? Nobody knows how to grow those?
No.
Think about that. Really? So those are all harvested in the wild?
In Italy, in Alba. And they don't survive anywhere else.
But when I was eating the Impossible breakfast patty sausage, which was really good, it was the best of the things I ate. It tasted so salty, that I thought, I'm not sure that this is a dietary upgrade.
Ah, yeah.
You haven't tried this stuff.
No, now I want to now.
But you know what?
Changing my lunch plans.
Restaurant food is notoriously salty too, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. My wife is sensitive to salt, and so she's kind of my canary in the coal mine when we go out to eat, because she'll start going, this is awfully salty.
I taste it right away.
Long before I do.
I taste it right away anymore, and I didn't used to be that way. And sometimes they'll have little icons like heart healthy or something. I'm not sure if there's a low sodium, but I guess you can ask, but I'm sorry that when I eat out now, that's discouraging me from going to some places, including steakhouses, you know?
Right. Small steakhouses, that's all they put on the steak is a little salt, but they don't have to overdo it.
Yeah. Okay, let's do this. It's 1:48. We'll make it a little extra time today. If you have a question or comment for Phil, the number's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Too often we run out of time for Phil to answer your questions, review a restaurant, or do what we sometimes call Phil's Flash Fry. That's where you ask about a certain restaurant. No, that's where you tell us something you really like at some location. We'd like to know. 630 texts in. Village Tavern Inn in Carroll Stream has a compostable takeout container, paper straws, and biodegradable, quote-unquote, plastic bags. That's good to know.
It is.
Village Tavern in Carroll Stream. Good for them. John, are these plant-based burgers grilled on the same grill as the beef burgers? I don't eat beef, therefore I don't want plant-based burgers being contaminated on the grill with the beef. Good question. Ask your server. 773, if she wants more resources for the border. Nope, I'm not going to talk about that right now. It's 1-48-312-981-7200. Ask Phil about a restaurant you're interested in. Give us your review.
I'm going to feed around my vegetables. I'm going to chop down my vegetables. I love you most.
We do this sometimes with Phil.
My favorite.
Mr. Vitel's the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune.
I love you most of all, my favorite pie.
847 said, hey, Phil, where's a good place for traditional Korean food?
Traditional? I'm not sure what we mean by traditional per se. The two of the best Korean restaurants that have opened recently are not exactly traditional, but they're certainly traditionally based. The first one would be Jung, which I gave 3 stars to, out in the 1400 West block of Chicago Avenue, and Passerotto, which is a Jennifer Kim's very fun Andersonville Korean restaurant. Again, both of those, these are younger chefs, much younger chefs, to be honest with you. And as a result, they take Korean tradition and then they update it a little bit.
Names of these restaurants are
Jung, J-E-O-N-G, on Chicago Avenue, and Passerotto, P-A-S-S-E-R-O-T-T-O, in Andersonville.
Nicely done, Phil Vitale.
Thank you.
By the way, speaking of Andersonville, John, if I were just driving into a neighborhood, where would I most likely find good places to eat out? What is the hot neighborhood for restaurants, excluding Fulton Market over here?
Because you wouldn't be driving there. You'd West be stuck Randall. In traffic. You'd be cursing at the people in
Do
front
you
of you.
Do you like what's happening on the West Side? The whole megalopolis of big, fancy...
I'm kind of digging it, actually, yeah. It's a lot of fun to be able to get out. If you leave the car one place and you can walk, especially if you're taking out-of-towners around, and you can hit 4 or 5 different places, stick your head in. And there's so much energy going on there, and the neighborhood has changed. Now you see people pushing strollers there.
So many places you really can't get into. That's my problem. It looks like a great place, but... How strollable or accessible is it all?
Mm-hmm.
Can I just walk into those places?
You can. They'll direct you to the bar, and they'll call your name in 45 minutes, maybe. But you won't starve.
John, we're eating uncut meat by Beyond the Butcher. Beyond the Butcher is the brand name, not Impossible Burgers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, John, you were eating. I think they're telling me what I was eating.
Ah.
Beyond the Butcher. John, there's a veggie hot dog, veggie chicken, veggie cheeseburgers. Bacon. There are good veggie cheese. This person is listing a bunch of vegetable based things they get that act like meat. And 312 says most of them are awful.
Well, I think early on, the early efforts were lacking, as most early efforts toward anything tend to be. But science marches on, and they're starting to get kind of better at it.
Okay, that's all I got for Phil's Flash Fry today. Phil, that's the only one. Traditional Korean food and some comments about Impossible Burgers. So I'm done with you, man.
Oh, man. Can we quickly just say hi and thank you and congratulations to Kumiko, which was one of the top 10 best new restaurants according to Food & Wine magazine. That was announced the day before yesterday.
Where's Kumiko?
Kumiko is 630 West Lake Street.
So that would be south of where we are right now, 630 West Lake. Where's that? What's across the street on Lake?
Green. No, it's Halsted. So it's a little, yeah, it's east of Halsted.
What kind of food do they serve?
Well, it is it's sort of Asian inflected, but what it mostly is a cocktail bar with a really fun menu. And so some people think of it as just a bar, and that's so this Food & Wine recognition is a really nice thing for them, and asserting that they have this fun thing called the kind of a cocktail omakase, where you go in and you sit down and you get 6 courses, 7 courses, and each one accompanied by a little drink.
Micro cocktail?
Yeah, not a whole full one, otherwise they'd be wheelbarrowing you out of there.
Name of that restaurant is
Kumiko, K-U-M-I-K-O, 630 West Lake Street.
224, area code 224 says, John, a lot of us live in the suburbs. We would love to hear recommendations for ethnic restaurants in the northwest suburbs. Maybe that's your assignment for next week.
Wow, yeah. That's...
Ethnic restaurants, northwest suburbs.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. There's lots of little bitty ones and not so many good, really good ones.
Okay, well, we'll touch back on that next Wednesday. And hey, Phil, we have reservations at Lloyd's before we see West Side Story at the Lyric Opera House. What are your feelings on Lloyd's? Would you recommend some place else in that area? Well, that'd be the theater district. Well, that's actually a little further west of the theater district, but what do you
Lloyd's
like?
Lloyd's is right across the street, so you're... I mean, from like the Opera House, so you can't do better than that.
Is that a decent choice for food?
It is. It's a decent choice. If you're willing to walk, I'd go a little bit farther west on on Randolph and maybe take a peek into a place like Proxy where you can get a bunch of little small dishes and then move on. I never want to do a three-course before a show because my tummy will be growling right during the quiet part.
So you're recommending walk a little further west to...
Yeah, or take an Uber back to the theater and just and do something like that.
What's the name of that location again?
Proxy is at the corner of Randolph and Jefferson.
So Proxy.
And across the street, Belmore also has some nice little tastes.
Read Phil Vitella in the Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com/dining. Thanks for coming in, Phil.
Thanks for having me.
I'll ask you about Northwest Ethnic next week. That's your assignment.
All right.
We're going to double your pay if you do this for us.
Wow. Yes.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Here we go.
Here's John Williams.
Here we go. I'm going to ask you guys some questions that James Holzhauer has answered correctly. They took 2 weeks off for the teachers' tournament, but he's back. He won on Monday. He won on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday. I don't know how he did today, but his brother's going to be in our studio in about 30 minutes. We appreciate Ian, who's enjoying James' 15 minutes of fame, too. He's been a fun guest here at WGN Radio the last few days. So if I asked you guys a couple questions, you think you could...
No problem.
Take a shot at it?
None whatsoever.
The category is cartoon characters for 200. I'll give you the name of the characters. You have to tell me what the cartoon is.
Jiminy Cricket.
Shaggy, Daphne, Velma.
What is Scooby-Doo?
Correct. For 400. Fry the Delivery Guy.
What is Futurama?
Nice.
Ding, ding.
There's a generational change.
For 600, Hank, Peggy, Luann Platter.
What is King of the Hill?
Yeah, I had that one.
For 800, Chucky, Tommy, and Jelly.
What is Little Red Riding
Hood? For 1,000, Tina, Jean, Linda Belcher.
Bob's Burgers? Yeah. Oh, man, I would kill this category.
Don't get mad at me.
Just did kill this category.
I don't think they played fairly, though. Aren't they supposed to give their name or something? They just blurted.
Besides,
I got Scooby-Doo.
I know. That's talk about a generational gap.
Well, that one was pretty easy.
None of these about the Acme.
It was not.
Acme Company and Roadrunner cartoons.
We know those.
Potent Potables mm-hmm. for 200. The main alcohol ingredient in a pina colada.
Steve, what is rum?
For 400, correct. To make a Long Island iced tea, combine vodka, tequila, and other booze with sour mix, and this soft drink. The answer is Coca-Cola.
Wow, wouldn't have got that.
For 600, a classic martini gets an olive, but a Gibson martini has a pearl, one of these.
What is Steve? Onion.
800.
What is Steve?
What is Steve drinking a martini? That's correct. For $800, this Greek liqueur is flavored with anise. Liqueur is flavored with anise. The answer is ouzo.
Ouzo.
The question is, what is? For $1,000, look out for the bull was Schlitz's longtime slogan for this high alcohol content beer.
Steve?
Yeah?
What is Schlitz malt liquor?
Malt liquor is the correct answer. Schlitz malt liquor. We'll refer to the judges here. No, the answer was malt liquor, not Schlitz's malt liquor.
Did you not say it was Schlitz?
I said Schlitz's longtime slogan for this high alcohol content beer.
No one calls it malt liquor. They called it Schlitz malt liquor.
The correct answer is what kind of high alcohol content beer is it? It's malt liquor. You said Schlitz's malt liquor. Lauren, do you think that he would get? They bust balls about this on TV.
They do. I don't know. They never
give you any room.
I don't know.
So I would say that's incorrect, Steve.
I will begin from here on out, giving you no room whatsoever.
I'm sorry. He would be wrong because he named the brand.
Yes. Acronyms and initials for 200. D.O.B.
Steve? Date of birth? Stop saying what is Steve.
Yeah, I think you got to stop that. I'll go by the blurt.
Okay.
For $400, D.O.A.
Dead on arrival.
For $600, this six-letter acronym is for the country's highest court.
SCOTUS.
Good one.
I got that one earlier, and I got it just as quickly, remember?
Wait, what?
So she knew, but she's promising you that she knew it as quickly now as she did in the office.
Was that, she just blurted out the answer?
Yes.
I have a witness in front of me.
She did answer it that quickly. So I think she wins. For $800, it's a daily double. In 2018, this dividing strip of land was the site of a historic meeting between Kim Jong-un and South Korea's president.
DMZ.
That's correct. The demilitarized zone. And finally, for $1,000...
I want to bet all of it, Alex.
The SWAT team has arrived bearing these... The SW in its name. In other words, SWAT's an acronym. What does SW stand for? Do, do, do.
Single white.
Nope. The SWAT team. What do they bring with them? It says here, the SWAT team has arrived bearing these.
Service weapons?
Special weapons.
Special weapons.
I'm going to give you $500.
Oh, okay, my God. I'm going to drink a Schlitz malt liquor.
And I'll just give you two more in the people category for $200. This promoter's boxing extravaganzas.
Who is Don King?
Correct. Included the Thrilla in Manila and the Rumble in the Jungle.
I did not know what that was.
Yeah. The Thrilla in Manila?
Mm-mm.
Muhammad Ali?
Again, you knew the question and answer before.
I know.
But
I'm
in the office, she didn't know.
I'm saying I don't know what that is anyway.
Two famous boxing matches, the Thrilla in Manila and the Rumble in the Jungle. One was in the Philippines, right?
Manila.
Yeah.
And then the other one was in Africa. I forget where exactly the Rumble in the Jungle was. For $400, in 2013, this contract employee leaked classified documents to journalist Glenn...
Who's Chelsea Manning?
Elif and I thought it was in The Office. It's Edward Snowden.
Yeah, and Brett just whispered in my ear, too. I am so relieved that I wasn't the only one who thought that.
The Prime Minister of Canada for $600 is the son of a longtime
Prime Minister. Who is Pierre Trudeau?
Justin Trudeau, not Pierre Trudeau.
Do you want the current Prime Minister?
You know, if you're going to answer like a fancy pants before the question is done.
I was told you have to blurt.
Justin's the best.
Margaret Trudeau. She was just in town.
Justin's the best. He rocks, man. I know. Well, she did stand up. And the review of it was really weird. So there's Margaret Trudeau doing some sort of stand-up monologue comedy piece. And Justin was there with some of their other kids in the audience.
Her
right?
old boyfriend, Mick Jagger, was there.
And I didn't get a feel. I don't know if you were at that show. I didn't get a feel for did it work or not. Was she funny or interesting or not? It was mostly, wow, she did that. How about this one? In 2012, this is for $800. The category is people. Your answer will be a person. In 2012, the Mo Ibrahim Foundation gave this South African archbishop a special
award. Who was Desmond Tutu?
Correct, Amundo. I can't believe that this is a $1,000 question. Tell me if this, to you, is the sort of thing that is worth $1,000 on Jeopardy. Mike Pence cast the tie-breaking vote to confirm her as the Secretary of Education.
Who's Betsy DeVos?
Yeah, that's too easy.
Come on, guys. That's Jeopardy going, you know what? You guys really aren't paying any attention.
I bet most people don't know because I know it because I'm in the news, but I bet most people couldn't name the Secretary of Education.
Unless
she's talking about shooting bears in the classroom.
She's one of the most high-profile, controversial... I don't know. I don't know. Maybe not. But... put it this way, if I knew it, I'm thinking it's way too easy.
Put it this way, that was my $1,000.
By the way, 219 says Jeopardy rule says you can't buzz until a complete question is asked. Just saying.
Seriously, really?
That's new then, isn't it?
Wait a minute.
No.
That's what 219 alleges.
Oh, well, 219 would know, I guess.
There's two controversial yearbook stories. You know, at Christmas time, we always have holiday controversies. And at graduation time, we always have commencement speaker controversies. Mike Pence spoke the other day, I believe, to Taylor University in Indiana, and some of the students and faculty walked out. Most of them stayed. I mean, tis the season for that, right? But the other controversy you get this time of year is that yearbooks are now being scrutinized for things that probably should not be in the yearbook. So in Oak Park River Forest High School, you have some students flashing the upside down okay, the likes of which you saw at a Cubs game earlier this year. Doug Glanville was doing some commentary. He's a popular and famous in these parts African-American player, now sportscaster. And there is the okay sign, which is either the circle game that you're playing on TV or it was a racist white supremacist gesture. So that, you know, fans have been kicked out. Well, lo and behold, that very same sign is appearing in the Oak Park River Forest High School yearbooks. And so now what are they going to do? They're going to pay Jostens $53,000 to reprint them without those pictures. Officials say they hope to have the new books delivered to the students by mid-June. To cover the cost of the reprint, administrators say they would transfer funds from the district's furniture budget to the general budget for the one-time expense. The school board called a special meeting May 20th to discuss the future of the current yearbooks, which have been printed and are currently at the high school but have not been distributed. 1,750 yearbooks are sitting there. Ain't nobody going to get them. They're going to be recycled, I guess. Last week, administrators announced the yearbooks would not be distributed in their current format after officials found 18 photos of students making the upside-down okay. Now, where's the other one here, Elif? Here it is. Highland Park seniors are allowed to select quotes that accompany their senior photos in the school's yearbooks. One of the quotes, attributed to Anonymous, was posted by a student. "If you tell a big enough lie and you tell it often enough, it will be believed," reads the quote. The principal said that officials halted the publication of the yearbooks and will not distribute additional copies until they rectify the situation. That quote is frequently attributed to Adolf Hitler and Joseph Goebbels.
Is there any reporting as to what this, if the student was trying to quote Hitler? Because that's a pretty common, and it applies now, right? I mean, it is a timely quote.
It doesn't say what the student's intent was, and I don't think it would matter in this case. I mean, it sounds like they're taking the same attitude I took about kicking the fan out of Wrigley Field. I said, I don't care what your intent is. That's how that's interpreted by so many people.
Have you never used that phrase or heard that phrase in conversation?
I have not used it. I don't. And now that they tell me, and by the way, that was Goebbels, the propaganda minister of the Third Reich. I would go, oh, yeah, right. I get it. But I would not. If I was on the committee to review the yearbooks, that would have slipped by me.
But now that you know...
That's a good question. Okay, now that I know that... you know what? Now, when I get to be king, I'm going to have somebody else do this. I do not want to be the yearbook police. It used to be skirts that were too high or too much cleavage shown or the students posing with a gun and schools are no... No, you know that. Some of them in Wisconsin, Minnesota, maybe in Illinois too, hunting's a big thing. So their photo they would sometimes show in their activities that they like to hunt, and there they are with a gun. And they say, you can't have a gun in the yearbook.
When I think after I graduated, or not too long after I graduated, well, it must have been a few years, at Marquette, they had a digital-only yearbook. And apparently they've gone away from that again. But, man, that would be an easy way to fix this, because then you just
delete,
go in digitally. Yeah. I mean, it's good.
I think you want a paper yearbook, though. You want a big 22-pound, big old honking glossy yearbook, don't you? And that way your friends will sign it, and then you'll put it in the basement and really never look at it again. That's what a yearbook does.
I love yearbooks. My parents' yearbooks.
Really? Do you sometimes, would you look at them?
I might. I don't know that I say I love them, but I do think they're very cool.
I remember signing them when I was a senior in high school.
I don't want anyone to read anything I signed on anyone's yearbook.
No, that's just terrifying to me. Only because it was so insipid. I mean, I'm sure I didn't say anything inappropriate, but I'm sure I said stuff that would just make people roll their eyes and go, shut up.
Was haggis a big thing when you guys signed yearbooks? H-A-G-A-S. It's like, have a great summer.
Oh, have a great summer. I thought you were referring to Steve wanting me to eat haggis, intestines of a sheep.
That was like what everyone would write at the end.
Oh, there was no, boy, I'm so old, abbreviations hadn't been invented yet.
There was the RMA, Remember Me Always.
Okay. Here's my question, 312-981-7200. Let me pause. What would your advice be? You are now going to be on the King John Williams Yearbook Committee. What are you going to do with some of these? By the way, about buzzing in early on Jeopardy, because here in Chicago we're all becoming students of that game. 219 says that Alex has to read the full answer before players can buzz in. That's why you sometimes see players smashing the buzzers to be first 219 is right, just saying, says somebody else. John, the rule changed about 15 years ago, says 708. Thank you. 219, Jeopardy rule says can't buzz in till complete question is asked. Just saying. And we talked about Lauren Underwood's asking questions to the acting Homeland Security Secretary about the children who are dying at the border in U.S. custody. 630 says, I'm from St. Charles, and Underwood represents part of our town. I could not be prouder of her. The Sox trade swings with the best in the AL West. Watch the White Sox head to Texas to bring the Astros back down to earth. That's tonight at 7 on WGN-TV. I'll pick up a quick call or two after I tell you about this, and then Ian Holzhauer, James's brother, is going to come by. We'll trade notes about how his brother is doing. Are you interested in buying a new home? Then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender. Not your bank, not the internet, definitely not some realtor's preferred lender. Oscar wanted to purchase the home he'd been renting from his father, but he didn't have the money for the down payment or closing costs, so he calls Team Hochberg for advice. Team Hochberg secured Oscar a gift of equity for the down payment and closing cost credits from his father to purchase the home. The garage was dilapidated, so Team Hochberg secured Oscar an FHA 203K loan, or was that a $203,000 loan? It says an FHA 203K. I'm not sure what that's up to build a new garage and make other much-needed renovations. If you'd like to purchase the home that you're currently renting and need help structuring the financing, call Team Hochberg, 855-56-DAVID, or visit 56david.com. Team Hochberg's helped thousands of people named Oscar. Team Hochberg's helped thousands of WGN listeners, and some of them named Oscar. But they can't help you if you don't call 855-56-DAVID or visit 56david.com. Homeside Financials, an equal housing lender and an Illinois residential mortgage licensee. MB 6761019. Their NMLS ID number is 1124061. Let's talk to Barb for a second here. Hey, Barb, you're on WGN. You're on the air.
Hi. I was hoping the second half of my memory would come back here. I don't know if it was on Colbert that this was pulled. At any rate, it was a man, I can't remember the network. Seems to me it was a network I didn't expect this from. But he was a young, very intelligent, very calm, very whatever black man who was quoting... Well, he's talking about the Trump situation. I don't remember the whole thing that well, but he was a copy of The Art of the Deal,
yeah,
by Trump.
Yeah.
And he quoted, or one of the quotes in there was,
if you tell a lie, and if you tell it
often enough,
if you tell a big enough lie often enough, it'll be believed. So that could be attributed to President Trump, is your point.
I believe probably that was the context in which this, I can't even remember where this started on your show now.
No, that's okay. I think that's sort of the elephant in the room here. I mean, if you saw that in a yearbook, thank you for the call, Barb. I'm not sure who you're talking about, but I get your point. If you saw that quote, this is what happened at Highland Park. They pulled the yearbooks. The kids aren't going to get their yearbooks until they fix it, and that won't happen till who knows when. And how they're going to figure out how to pay for them, I don't know. This happened in Oak Park. With the symbol the kids were flashing, it's going to cost Oak Park $52,000 from their furniture budget. They're going to have them all reprinted and give them to the kids at no additional expense. What are they going to do in Highland Park? I don't know. But the quote under one of the kids' pictures was, if you tell a big enough lie and you tell it often enough, it will be believed. Okay, if I just saw that, I might at first assume that that is something critical of the current president. That may be somebody throwing shade on Donald Trump. But it's being pulled because it was attributed to Hitler and Goebbels. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that one is.
See, I hear that one referenced a lot. That saying, before Donald Trump, but in Donald Trump, if you know, it just is said so. Now, Highland Park also has a high Jewish population, student population. So there is a different sensitivity there, than there would be in, say, Schaumburg.
I suppose this would matter. what the intent of the kid is. I mean, because obviously that's true. Take Donald Trump and take the Nazis out of this. That statement is true. But if it is being used as Nazi support, then I guess it should come down. That goes to the intent of the kid. I've been saying all week or all month that the intent of the individual doesn't matter. It's more how it was received. So I guess if I'm consistent, we're pulling the yearbooks, and I'm really mad.
It's funny because they are similar in many ways.
It is. And I'm really mad now at the faculty advisor who didn't suss this out a little bit better. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Hi, it's 2:38. They could do a Jeopardy game where all of the questions would be about James Holzhauer, the Jeopardy champion. You know, and it would be, I don't know, there'd be all sorts of statistics and things about him. But all of the questions and answers would be about James Holzhauer being on Jeopardy.
Well, wouldn't that give him an advantage?
Well, in this situation, he's not one of the contestants.
Okay.
But you are. So, for instance, the previous guy, Jennings, that was the big winner.
Yeah.
He averaged, let's see, in his career, Jennings averaged a daily double net gain of $5,300. He got an extra $5,300 every time he hit a daily double. How much is James Holzhauer gaining on his daily double?
I'm going to say $7,200.
Four times that amount, $20,000.
Really?
Of the 830 questions that he's tried to answer, this was before yesterday's show, of the 830 questions he's tried to answer, how many has he gotten correct?
Well, to play the part of Elifier, I'll say 803.
Yeah, because I said that earlier.
Yeah.
Of 54 daily doubles, how many did he get correct?
50?
50's correct. Hokey smokes.
Well, I just guessed.
Of 22 final Jeopardies, as of the publication of this article a few days ago, of the 22 final Jeopardies, how many did he miss?
Well, I'm going to say 22.
He got...
He got 22 correct.
Yeah, he got 21 right.
Okay.
Yeah. 97% of the time, he buzzes in and gets it correct. It's bizarre. His brother Ian is on line 7. Ian Holzhauer joins us again on WGN. Ian, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me again, John.
Are you having fun, or are you guys getting tired of this?
No. I mean, it's great. And if nothing else, my brother's becoming financially successful at a pretty rapid rate, so I can't complain about anything.
Is he going to share any of that with the family?
I don't know. That hasn't really been discussed. Right now, I think we're just happy about his accomplishments on the game show.
When his run started, or when he became famous for his run, because he'd been winning for a while, you came on with us, and you reminded us that these episodes were taped in February at the time, right?
Right. And I'm not even sure, we may be into March now, but yeah, they were taped a long time ago.
Okay, so that's just this. There's this weird time lag. That is, he may still be winning, or he may not still be winning, because of the lag between what we see on TV and what's actually happening, right?
Right. And I didn't know this at the time, but I guess when he was traveling out to L.A., he would have to come up with kind of a cover story to tell people for where he was.
Well,
and this is true.
Let me ask you, Ian, where is James these days?
So he's on vacation this week, and that's a true statement. I don't think he's in L.A. or anything like that. But they're also not filming the show, so they're off on their summer break right now, and that's public information.
Do you know, is he still winning?
Yeah, I don't know that. And if he tells anyone, they withhold the winnings from him, so he's got a pretty good incentive not to.
So it's possible that after this summer break they're on, he'll continue to record episodes that we'll see later in the year. Or it may be that he's out and we're just now watching the episodes that were previously recorded.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be pretty incredible if he were still going in the fall, but yeah, that is possible.
Well, I don't see how anybody's going to take him down. I mean, these just haven't been that close, have they? What's the closest anybody's been to him? Do you know?
Well, there were two games that were very close. There was one that was within $18.
Oh, my.
And then actually game two was a real scare. So the contestant that was beating him had a daily double at a really crucial time and got it right. And he was really on the ropes, but he managed to pull through. So it's definitely not a foregone conclusion. Every game is important.
I want to be open to you. So our news click, we do a daily web poll question here.
Sure.
Is James Holzhauer, this was yesterday, James Holzhauer is still dominating on Jeopardy. And then you had four options to what you think's going on. A, he's smarter than everyone. B, he's quicker than everyone. And that's the answer I gave, because obviously he's super smart, but I think the trick is to be quick. Anyway, C, he's smarter and quicker than everyone. But that may not be true, because if you're not the smartest, but you're the quickest, you'll still prevent other people from at least getting a first crack at it. I mean, if you had to be one, I would say be smart enough, but be quicker, as opposed to quick enough and smarter. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think another part of it is being able to take risks. That's a big part of it. On these daily doubles, a lot of people just don't feel comfortable risking their entire bankroll on one question. He's a professional gambler. He calls that an even money proposition. He said, look, if a casino were offering me even money for something when I get questions right 90% of the time, I'd take that any day. And I think that willingness to deal with risk helps him out.
D of the ABCD answers to explain your brother's success is, I think something's fishy here. And I'm glad you're laughing, because I don't like the implication there. But 12% said that. I mean, yeah. It's weird how well he's doing.
Yeah, yeah. If I didn't know him and I were just watching this on TV for the first time, I mean, it would be shocking. But kind of having grown up around it, it's not surprising at all to me.
Okay, but so say he runs the table on potent potables or Shakespearean quotes or something, right? I know some of us have silos of information we'd be good at, but it's not just how deep he goes, but it's how broad. I mean, are you shocked at sometimes the things, the categories that he's knowledgeable in?
I actually think it's kind of to his advantage that he's not like a scholar, right? I mean, if he were somebody that studied Shakespeare and had a degree in that, he'd be so deep in that that it would hurt his breadth. Really, I think what helps him is, you know, his real interests in life are truly like professional wrestling, baseball, music. He really likes like heavy metal. And all this other stuff, he can just kind of casually skim the surface on what are the most famous quotes from Shakespeare literature, what are some famous plays, and not really have to go too deep into them. And I think it actually works to his advantage that Jeopardy asks about a breadth of questions, but not very deep.
Well, would you categorize his memory? Is it photographic, or is there something special about his ability to recall?
I think you kind of hit it on the head earlier. I think recall is the more important aspect of it than just remembering, because I think there are a lot of people that can remember facts, but he's just lightning quick, as people are seeing on TV.
Yeah. Ian Holzhauer is on a phone line. If you've got a question or comment, something that's been puzzling you about his brother's extraordinary ability, you can call or text in right now, 312-981-7200. Ian, do you think this is good for the show? I suppose so, huh? I mean,
look, people are talking about Jeopardy all over the place. Actually, this just about an hour ago, I stopped by Brown's Chicken, the Brown's Chicken where I was employed for the first time, by the way, in Naperville. And the lady who was checking me out said, you know, the guy who's on Jeopardy, he used to work here. And and I said, yeah, I know him pretty well. But I mean, look, when you got the people at Brown's Chicken talking about it, when you got, especially here in Naperville, the whole town talking about it, people across America are talking about it. I think it's great for the ratings. Yeah, they're taking a little financial hit on the payouts, but I mean, you're in the media, you know, it's all about getting viewers and listeners.
Yeah. Well, and especially when you say, okay, my God, but he's won $1 million. Well, I'll bet Alex Trebek makes $1 million. I'll bet Vanna White makes $1 million. I'll bet they got $1 million for the publicity that they're getting. In my mind, it's a fair trade.
Right. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not going to make this comment to throw shade at anyone, but I think the kicker for the Bears made like $6 million, you know, doing his job.
Right.
And I mean, he could be the greatest or worst kicker, but, you can get paid pretty well for that skill.
Well, and I wonder, though, whoever's coming up with the questions, I wonder what the lag time is between their authoring those questions and answers and him receiving them, because you'd think at some point they'd say, okay, we know he knows sports. Let's not do sports. I wonder if they're trying to write the game now at him to make it harder for him to win. Or for that
matter.
Yeah,
when Ken Jennings was on, they actually changed the rules during his run. So they started letting his opponents practice with a buzzer They give them a practice buzzer before they played because they were hoping people could get faster at the trigger. And now everybody gets to do that. But, yeah, I mean, one change they could make, and I'm not trying to make suggestions for the show, but one thing they could do is start putting the daily doubles all over the board, because right now they're concentrated heavily in the row that's kind of one up from the bottom or two up from the bottom. That's where most of them are. And one of his big strategic advantages is he knows that and he searches for them there. And they're never in the top row. That's been a rule of the game for forever. So if they started throwing some in the top row, that'd be a pretty big change.
Our listeners have some questions for you. My last question for you is, do you think there would come a point where he would say, okay, I'm just going to walk away, let somebody else play the game, because I'd be here forever?
Yeah, I have no idea, but I really think these games are closer than people realize. I mean, there's been a lot of times where if someone else had gotten a daily double at a key time, he could have really been on the ropes. He was on the ropes twice. So I don't think he'd last long enough that that it would get to that point. But, you know, maybe I'm underestimating here.
Yeah, here's a question from Bob. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I was just wondering, is there any one category or one, you know, area that you've been really surprised that he's done really good at going, I had no idea he had any clue about this stuff?
Well, I don't know about a whole category, but last night there was a question about the Rugrats, and we actually didn't have Nickelodeon growing up. So he definitely didn't get that knowledge from our household, but he's pretty immature, so it wouldn't surprise me if he was watching that show in college.
Thanks for the call. Good question. Good question. The category was cartoon characters for 800. The answer was Chucky, Tommy, Angelica. He buzzed in and said, what is Rugrats? Good for him, I guess. Gene, you're on WGN. What was your question?
My question is, was he one of these kids, obviously very smart, but a tremendously good student, or was he the smart kid who just sort of was not so interested in grade school, high school, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I would definitely say number two to the extreme, right? So in spite of being a state math champion, he was a C student even in math because he would get a perfect score on every test, but then he would never do his homework. I mentioned this last time I was on John's show. One time he missed an entire final exam in college because he never went to class and he didn't realize they changed the date of the exam. So I don't quote me on this, but I think he may have even graduated U of I with like a D average or something. So definitely not the high grade point average student.
Somehow that's reassuring to a lot of people out there.
You too can be a Jeopardy star.
Exactly. 305 says, has James shouted out a birthday message to Ian on TV yet? I feel like I never saw Ian's name in Final Jeopardy.
Well, there's a reason for that. He did give me my birthday, 10-16-82, so that'd be 101,682. But the producer just had actually set up a new rule. This is the James Holzhauer rule, that you can no longer do birthday shout-outs in Final Jeopardy. So
wait a minute. What do you mean? 10-16-82, that's your birthday?
Right. So what? So his, go ahead.
No, you go ahead and explain how he was able to do a shout-out relative to that.
So after Final Jeopardy, his final score in one game was 101,682. So 10-16-82 was
his. He was able to manipulate his bet and winnings so that he would score your birthday?
Right. And he's done that for numerous people. I mean, that's the kind of stuff he can do instantly in his head. That's just always been that way. He could have done that as a seven-year-old.
That's off the chain. That is amazing.
Yeah.
In terms of betting, it seems like he's strictly numbers. Did he bet against the? What did he do on the Cubs in the World Series?
This is a tough story, right? So, I mean, he's been the biggest Cubs fan for his entire life, but he had the story where back in like fourth grade, he was really emotionally attached to a football team, the San Diego Chargers, and they were the biggest underdogs ever to go into a Super Bowl. And he didn't care; he just bet even money, a whole bunch of money on the Chargers. And they got just destroyed by the 49ers. And he vowed from that point forward, he would never let his emotions get in the way of his betting. And so, yeah, he had some money riding against the Cubs in 16, which dampened the celebration he otherwise would have been able to have.
At what age did he make that decision not to let his emotions get in the way?
I think it was like fourth grade.
It's nice to talk to you again, Ian. Congratulations to your family. Obviously, some of the intelligence and charm has rubbed off on you, too. It's fun to visit. Let's connect again sometime soon.
Sounds good, John. Thanks for having me on.
Ian Holzhauer is James' brother. You know, Rokan and Anna DeBlantis are going to come on here in just a second. I'll get out of the way. We'll go into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and before that, they'll say hi. But if we were doing an all-star Jeopardy team from WGN Radio to go up against James Holzhauer, who would it be? I was just thinking about that. Who, three among us, would be so good on the buzzers that we'd have a chance to take him down? And I think I'd put Ro on that team. I think Ro would be very good at that. Huh? I'm not just sucking up to the afternoon guy here. I'm trying to think of who else would be. You have a feel for that, Elif, on the
I'm
air?
Thinking.
you're thinking that nobody would be good on Jeopardy on this staff?
No, I think Ro could work.
I'd put Justin Kaufman on there.
Yes,
I would. Yeah,
yes.
I was thinking. Well, and here's the thing about Justin. Justin knows the stuff he knows so well. Talk city politics, state politics, some of his favorite subjects. He just kills. Maybe he's broad enough. He could do, you know, sports or whatever. Who else would be on that list? Justin be good. Ro. How about you, Kim? Would you want to play
Jeff.
Jeopardy?
Jeff,
well, I'm good at pop culture. I'm not so great at some of the other things, but I might be good on a team.
Right. This is the trivia. Now we're at a bar. And we're doing trivia night.
Let's try it out. I love that.
Do we do that?
Bill?
You know, we have a softball team. We should have a WGN radio trivia team.
Oh, yeah.
And we will make appearances at bars and places.
Take people on.
Totally. And we will lose by a lot.
Well, you know what? When you're doing your hometown voices, aren't you to have that coming up this summer?
Yes,
let's add that to your agenda.
We're going to be at Swedish Days. Okay, memo
to self. Let's figure that out.
Hold on. Hey, Ro, here's the All-Star Team Jeopardy.
Yep.
WGN. You know who I think should be on that panel?
Who?
Bill Leff.
Oh, yes.
Quietly, unassumingly, the stuff that he seems to know is amazing.
Totally.
He has complete, and let me just quote Arnold Schwarzenegger, total recall. It is amazing what he knows, what he remembers. It's like, he's like a sponge. Everything that he's ever witnessed, he can recall.
Right, so he knows SpongeBob stuff. And, you know, he's a comedian, but then he knows, like, stuff I didn't think he'd know.
Yeah.
Casually. He doesn't even brag about it.
Right, but he doesn't, but the other thing he doesn't want to do, he would be our team captain.
Yes.
I think team leader.
Totally.
Yes. And he's got the hat and everything. Is that, you know, there's just things he just doesn't want to engage in. You know, that's the thing.
I know, that's it. Like, if I knew the stuff he knows, I would come up to people and go, did you know I know this? But he's not even interested in showing off.
No.
Very unassuming.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the word.
Surprises you, that Bill.
You know, it's so funny about trivia, though. It's like, you know, you think because of what we do, we would be really good at it. I get brain freezes. It's the timing of it. It's like, you know, it'll be whatever the question is. And I'm like, oh, I know the answer to this.
Right.
Oh, I know.
You get a half a second.
But it doesn't come out.
I'm the master of give me the right answer and I'll go, yep, that's it. I can do that.
Maybe you're not on our team, John.
I do like this idea, though.
But we need to some night, I don't know, have a bar, have a pub. Ro, you're connected with these people.
Oh, I have no idea what you're talking about. I think that's an insult.
Let's do some sort of charity fundraiser where the WGN Radio All-Star Fantasy Trivia Team takes on other listeners. They have to pay a lot of money to get in. Mm-hmm. The money will go to the charity of Rose or Captain Bill Leff's choice.
Captain Bill Leff.
And then we'll see how we do.
Love that idea.
And I will serve. I'll be the bartender is what I'll do.
I like it. I think Thomas Jefferson should be the moderator. I think how we should go.
That'd be perfect.
All right, now they're making fun of me, and I'm out.
Goodbye. All right, goodbye.